no difference if you are rich or poor. Now, what does that mean? Am I saying, are we saying that in Saudi and in Russia are exactly beloved by a God the same way? Certainly not. But what we are saying is the definition of a righteous person or a non-righteous person is not based on some objective standard. It's based on how much of your abilities are you giving to God. So if your abilities are less, but you're giving to Hashem whatever you have, you are equally beloved to a person of much, much greater potential who is giving what he has to Hashem. Because the measure of your chashivas is not objectively what you give to God, but how much of yourself are you giving. So the Mabit, for example, gives an example in the case of learning. Mabit was a great rabbi in the time of Rabbi Yosef Karo. In fact, apropos of nothing in particular, one of the major Shemitah machloksim was between Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Mabit, and that is whether the produce of non-Jewish fields is subject to the laws of Shemitah. That's a machlokus that still resonates even today. According to the Beis Yosef, it is not subject to the laws of Shemitah. According to the Mabit, it is. And Halacha, we follow the Beis Yosef. But be it as it may, in addition to being Mabit, by the way, is a Rashi tape. Mabit is Rav Moshe ben Yosef Trani. Trani, the family was middle class. And Mabit had also a famous son, Haritz. So you may, Rav Yosef Trani. So you may discover, when you learn Kedushin V'Iyun, one of the great commentaries on the Sefer Kedushin is Kedushei HaMaharit. Okay. But be it as it may, in addition to being a great halachic scholar, the Mabit wrote a book of Hashkafa, a book of Jewish philosophy, that is called Beis Elokim, the House of God. So in the Beis Elokim, the Mabit gives the following interesting mashal. I don't remember if my numbers are correct. He said, let's imagine you had a person who's a real, real, real genius. He could learn 100 pages of Gemara a day. That's pretty impressive, 100 pages of Gemara a day. Okay? And because, you know, most people, let's say, can only do one daf a day, that's not Yomi, or much less than that. So he figures he'll only do 50%. He'll do 50 plus a day. Now that's still 50 or 60 or 100 times more than most other people. But he's only working at 50% of his capacity. And then you have another person who has to struggle very hard just to finish one daf or one omelet in a whole week. So here, this guy can do 50 plot a day, so let's multiply it. Let's say 50 times 6. He does 300 plot a day. The other guy does one plot a week, or 300 plot a week versus one plot a week. So we would think superficially. Again, I don't know if my bid uses these exact numbers. We would think superficially that the guy who did 300 blots of Gemara a week is 300 times better than the guy who only did one blot of Gemara a week. My bid says it's exactly the opposite. Because the guy who did 300 blot a week only gave 50% of his abilities to Hashem. And the person who did one blot over the whole week gave Hashem 100%. And Hashem does not judge you by what you accomplish objectively. Hashem judges you by how much of yourself did you give to his service. That's a tremendous thing. And in Shemayim, the guy who did one blot a week is going to get double, at least, the reward of the guy who did 300 blot a week. Because he was doing 100, and the other person was only doing 50. Now, the emphasis, none of us, I think, can, maybe I shouldn't speak with anyone else, can claim to be acting at 100%. That's virtually impossible, but whatever it is, this statement that teachers love to tell students, but doesn't really work in the real world, that the most important thing is the effort you put forth. Well, in the real world, unfortunately, that's not the, well, actually, this is the real world, but in the world out there, Pastor Sheldon, this is the real world. But in the world out there, in the fake world out there, that is just a statement. That doesn't mean anything. You can have all the great effort in the world. If you only get 50% of the answers right on the test, you're going to get a 50. And the guy who didn't have to study, but he's just brilliant, who gets 100, he's going to get an A. So in the real world, your effort really doesn't count for a lot. But in Shamayim, that's exactly what does count. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at how hard you worked, how much you struggled. So it really makes no difference if you're an Ani and you're an Ashir, because you stand before Hashem with equality of access and equality of dignity. It's all based on how much of your effort you put forth. And that is why, by the Matzah Hashem, we don't allow the rich person, so to speak, to have more credit in the Avodah. Because rich and poor have the equal ability to connect to each other by putting forth the effort that is within themselves. Right? That's a very important mussar. And that should be a chizur for people. Because, you know, sometimes we can look, sometimes, you know, that's why Rav Hutner didn't like sometimes the genre of Gedolim biographies. Now you read Gedolim biographies. So typically, Gedolim tended to be, you know, super geniuses. Most of them, there were some exceptions, they think. And a typical Gadol biography might say, by the age of four, this person finished the three Bavas with Tosfos and knew them by heart. That was the age of four. By the age of six, you know, Bavli, the age of eight, Yerushalmi, you know, the age of 10, Zohar, you know, whatever it is. And you read about this phenomenal genius, and then we look at it and we say, well, okay, that's them. We have no way of connecting to them. Either we get depressed because it's impossible, or what is equally bad is we get indifferent because we say, these are goals I can never achieve. But if you understand that in Shemayim, what is important is how much of yourself have you given to God, then we understand that every single person has an equal ability to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, the truth of the matter is, even putting in the hours and the effort to the Gadol, you know, you have to kind of be a Gadol. You know, somebody sent to the Nesiv, of the Telechi Yehuda Berlin, the great Rishiva of Elazhin, and he had heard that before the Nesiv was Rosh Hashiva, because once he was Rosh Hashiva, he couldn't do all that learning. If you're looking for a job, that you want to be able to learn a lot of Torah, you know, don't become a Rosh Hashiva. That's the emphasis. Rosh Hashiva is not a job for somebody who wants to learn. Stockbrokers and some other, you know, there are businesses that can give you a lot of time to learn. Running yeshiva is not. So, but somebody said to the Nesiv, so even the Nesiv, after he became Rosh Hashiva, didn't have all the hours to learn that he had. But they said to the Nesiv, I heard before you became Rosh Hashiva, you would learn 18 hours a day, or 20 hours a day. And Nesiv says, absolutely not, absolutely not. I only did 16 hours a day. But he said, but I did 16 hours a day for 25 years, including Shabbos, Yom Tov, Erev Shabbos, etc. Erev Shabbos, 16 hours a day. So, we have an interesting formula because it is said, although I personally don't believe it, but it is said, it is reported, that the Nitziv as a child, as a young man, was considered to be of mediocre intelligence. This is what is reported. And the Nitziv was a tremendous maspid, 16 hours a day for 25 years. So essentially, people say, how do I become a gadol? I'll tell you exactly. Learn for 16 hours a day for 25 years. You'll be the Nesiv. Maybe you'll be greater than the Nesiv, because you might have, you know, higher IQ than the Nesiv. At least if you believe the stories, which I guess I'm entirely sure I do believe. Elamai, the answer is, we don't want it enough. You know, if we really, really wanted to achieve that, it is within our grasp. But be it as it may, without holding very, very amazingly high standards, all we can say is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu values the effort that we put forth. And that is the inner meaning of the Machtis HaShekel. The rich person does not give more, and the poor person does not give less, because the lesson basically is rich and poor, not only in terms of money, but in terms of talents and abilities and kokos, they stand before the Almighty in a position of equality. That's very important. So lesson number one of the Machtis HaShekel is all Jews have an equal opportunity to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if their talent levels are significantly different, because you are judged based on how much of yourself have you given to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They say by marathon runners, that the marathon runners who try to improve their time, they are never competing, at least mentally they say, they are not competing against other runners. They are only competing against themselves. That's a very significant point. Avodas Hashem is not about a competition. It's about becoming the best that you can become based on who you are and the level. But Chaim Wasserman writes that this is the meaning. This is the meaning of a passage in the Rambam. There's a famous passage in the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva where the Rambam talks about free will. Right? That's where the Rambam discusses free will, a very favorite Dor Sameach topic. And the Rambam says, and I'm sure you've heard this language before, every single person can be as righteous as Moshe Rabbeinu or as evil as Yeravam ben Nevat. Nobody is born to either be a Rasha or a Tzaddik. Whether you are a Rasha or a Tzaddik depends totally on your free will. But the question that people ask is, okay, I understand that generally, but every person can be as great as Moshe Rabbeinu? Is that not somewhat of an exaggeration? The Torah says there will never be a prophet as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. In fact, that the Rambam himself says that is one of the 13 principles of faith, that there will never be a prophet that will be as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. Even when the Rambam describes Mashiach, the Rambam will say Mashiach will be so great, he'll say he'll be a prophet almost as good as Moshe Rabbeinu. There will never be that ability. This was God's hand-picked shaliach. So how can we say every person can be as righteous as Moshe Rabbeinu? So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman explains based on this idea, and he brings in first an interesting Radak. You know Radak? Radak is the name you should know. Rav David Kimchi. Rav David Kimchi, Radak, was a Rishon before the Ramban. And the Kimchi family, both his brother and his father, as well as himself, were very, very well known. They were Gedolim. They were very well known for their Pirushim on Tanakh. So if you open up the Gros Gedolos, not on Chumash, we don't really have the commentaries of the Radak on Chodesh, but if you open up Yoshua, Shoftim, you open up Leviim, you will see that the Radak is the main commentary on Leviim. So, but the Radak is considered to be an authoritative Rishon, and other Rishon quote the Radak very much. In fact, he was so esteemed that they implied in a humorous way, you know, Pirkei Avos has a statement, Made kemach ein Torah. If there's no flour, there's no Torah. If you don't have parnasa, you can't learn. But they made it a pun on the family named Kimchi, which is flour. He says, the main Kimchi ein Torah. Without the Kimchi family, we don't understand the Torah. So the Radak comments the father. This is what the Chachamim will use to explain the Rambam. The beginning of Sefer Yoshua, when it describes the death of Moshe, says the Lavda that Moshe was Eved Hashem. Moshe was the servant of God. That's the appellation that is used for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Eved Hashem. So the Radak comments, why is Moshe called Eved Hashem? Of all the names we could give Moshe, why is he called Eved Hashem? So Radak says very brilliantly that this is connecting you to a certain halacha we have about Avadim. What is the din of an Eved? Ma shekana Eved, kana rabba. Whatever a slave acquires belongs to a master. If a slave earns money, it belongs to his master. If a slave wins the lottery, it goes to the master. If the slave doesn't report it, who's going to know, so to speak? But halachically, it belongs to the master. If a slave finds a wallet without a siman, so you normally keep the money, it goes to the master. Moshe Rabbeinu is called Eved Hashem because whatever talent he possessed, he gave back to Hashem. Amazing. So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman says, based on this Radak, we can actually understand what the Rambam means when he says, every person can be like Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam doesn't mean we can be as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's abilities, his talents, his kohos, were far beyond what we could ever attain. But just like he was an Eved Hashem because he took whatever Hashem gave him and gave it back to Hashem 100%, we can be that same Eved Hashem with our much more limited abilities. But we can also strive to be an Eved Hashem. And, as I said in my bit, if I give my 100% and Moshe gives his 100%, even if his 100% is billions and trillions more than my 100%, I am actually equal to Moshe Rabbeinu because we're both giving 100%. And therefore, Rambam says, that is the meaning of Vayomas Moshe Eved Hashem. Why Moshe is called Eved Hashem, that is what the Rambam means when he says every person can be as great a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu. By the way, just as a little aside, a little irrelevant digression, but it's an interesting thing. This suggests that Moshe Rabbeinu was kind of supernaturally gifted, that God gave the neshama of Moshe Rabbeinu unusual powers that were never given to any other human being. But Moshe had free will to use it or not to use it, because of Bilam. Bilam was, in a way, like Moshe Rabbeinu too, but he used it for a bad way. However, there's another statement that people say in the name of the Medrash that suggests an opposite idea. They say I say in the name of the Medrash because you'll hear the conclusion here. Paro apparently was a student of, what do they call it? Physiognomy. Physiognomy means the shape of a skull. There was such a, or phrenology, I'm sorry, phrenology I think was also called. This used to be a pseudoscience that people believed in, maybe even today they believe in it. That if you look at the shape of a skull, the bumps and the shape of a head, you can determine a person's personality. There are all sorts of books on it, you know, the books. So Paro studied a picture of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Paro said, I can't believe this man is righteous. Everything about him indicates a coarse, decadent personality. And he called Moshe Rabbeinu to meet him, because I guess he didn't remember Moshe growing up in Paro's house. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, you're right. I was born with a coarse, inferior personality. But through my work and my bechira and my struggle, I perfected myself. Now, this would indicate the opposite idea, that Moshe was born with deficits and disadvantages. The Tverish Yisrael, the great commentator on the Mishnayos, brings this medrash as an encouragement of the strength of bechira, that even if you're born in kind of an inferior way, you can make yourself emotional. But what's interesting is that bibliographers have discovered that there was no such medrash. There is no such medrash. And indeed, such a medrash is inconsistent with many teachings of Chazal, such as when Moshe Rabbeinu was born, the house was filled with light. And they actually point out that the source of this so-called medrash was actually a German folktale. That does not have any halakhic authority. First, Shalom got it from a secondary source. And in the most recent Mishnayos of the Tverish Yisrael, they take out the story. Now, whether that's right or not, I think that's a big question, because you really shouldn't censor a work. You should put a footnote. You should say, but they took it out. So be it as it may, the point I'm making is that the mainstream Masorah of Chazal is that Moshe Rabbeinu was born with very unique and special gifts. But through his bechira, he used them in a good way. And when the Rambam says, we can be like Moshe Rabbeinu, it does not mean we can duplicate his gifts, but we can be an Eben Hashem in terms of giving him 100% of what we have. And that's a very, very important question. Because you're not comparing yourself against anybody else. You're simply asking yourself, what can I be? And of course, we see this idea over and over and over again. The famous Rav Zusha, one of the great early Hasidic Rebbes, said, when I come to Shemayim after 120 years, I am not worried when Hashem asks me, why was I not Avraham Avinu? He does. I don't have his abilities. Why was I not Moshe Rabbeinu? That's not my job. What I'm really scared is, why wasn't I Zusha? Because we were put in this world with a mission. We were put in this world with the ability to accomplish that mission. The kochos of our neshama. And to ask why, or to feel bad, I don't have somebody else's kochos. Hashem has his reasons. We don't know. But did I use the kochos Hashem gave me? That's going to be a hard question. That's going to be a difficult question. Okay, so lesson number one. So today we're talking about not the Adonim, because it's another lesson. We're talking about the Machtis HaShekel of Korbanos. Keep in mind the perspective here. So lesson number one of the Machtis HaShekel of Korbanos is equality of dignity and access and chashiva in serving others. There is lesson number two, which is related, but it's not exactly the same. And this is a famous Hasidic Shavuot, that why do you give half a shekel? Give a whole shekel. Why half a shekel? Answer, a half by definition is incomplete unless it's joined to another half. Two halves make a whole, but a half, even if it's a whole coin, like a half shekel coin, but you call it a half, so it's given the designation of something defective. And therefore, if lesson number one of Machtis HaShekel is equality of dignity, lesson number two is interdependence. I cannot be shalem, complete, unless I connect myself to other Jews. Now that's important for two reasons. It reminds me that my growth in holiness and Kedusha depends on my connecting to other Jews. That if I live a life of sinas chinam, if I live a life of polarization, if I live a life of separating myself from the tzibur, no matter how righteous I think I might be, by definition I'm incomplete. But it also carries another lesson in that interdependence. If I am not whole unless I'm connected to you, it also tells me you're not whole unless you're connected to me, which means it gives me chizuk in the importance of my life and in the importance of my mission. You see? Because every person realizes that they are needed to bring Hashem Shekhinah into the world. You see? Because everybody's incomplete unless they're all connected. So, you know, people say, what's more important, you know, the heart or the brain? You know, the answer is you're dead. You're missing either one of them. You know, you're just not here, right? So what should not really say? Everything is indispensable. Every Jew is indispensable. This is a famous teaching in the Zohar, although it's very, very rare, because the number is not true, that there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, and there were 600,000 approximately basic souls that left Egypt. Every soul has a letter in the Torah, and if a Torah is missing a letter, the whole Torah is puzzled. So if there's any soul who's not connected to his letter, our collective Sefer Torah is puzzled. Now, there are a lot of kashas in the Torah, I'll save it for another time. There are not 600,000 letters in the Torah, there's only 325,000. Now, that's not within a margin of error under any definition. The Zohar kemat doubles the letters of the Torah. Yeah, so some explanations are that the Zohar is counting letters as a composite, so it'll count a hey. Every hey as a dalet and a vav, right, things like that. So, you know, there are ways of counting. And like I said, that's another question. But be it as it may, therefore, we have to realize that interdependence tells us that if there is a Jew in the world who's not doing his mission, it doesn't only affect that Jew, it affects all of us. They drag us down, and if we don't do our responsibility, we are dragging other people down. And of course, within the confines of a Beis Medrash, you obviously know that this is true, because a person doesn't participate in the Seder, a person misses Shir, there are ripple effects. There really are ripple effects. Now, good. Even in terms of our own selfish interests, we want to do what's right. But even if we say, "Hey, it's my life," you know, if I want to go to hell, quite literally. it's my business. But the short answer is that in this type of environment, it's not just you that's getting affected. It's other people that's getting affected. And that is the responsibility we have. And that is the second lesson of the Masters HaShekel, the interdependence. Right? So the two lessons of the Masters HaShekel of the Korbanos are, number one, equality of dignity, and number two, interdependence and community. So tomorrow we will spend everything special banquet tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So you have to dress up nicely, or you know. Okay. But next, so be on your best behavior. And the next time we'll talk about the other matzahs of Shekel, the Adonim, because they really represent a different lesson. Okay.